introducing the challengers first. From Norwich, England, Sarah! And she brought the family.
The night family's arrived.
Welcome to The Contrarians, where we are right and you are wrong. I'm Julio.
And I'm Alex. Here on the show, we rage against the Rotten Tomatoes machine. For the first half of each episode, Contrarians Corner, we trash the fresh red tomatoes and praise the rotten green splotches, making our case any way we can.
The aptly titled Real Talk serves as the second half of each episode. This is where we discuss our true feelings on the movie we're covering. For more information on our podcast and to browse past episodes, you can head over to our website, wearethecontrarians.com.
From there, you can also access our Patreon and merchandise, because capitalism.
If you enjoy our attempts at comedic film discussions, we encourage you to subscribe and leave us a review on whatever podcatcher you use.
If you'd like to reach out to us directly, that's what social media is for. You can find us on most platforms as @ContrarianPrime.
You can also see what we look like if you go to youtube.com/@ContrarianPrime, and you can contact us by email at wearethecontrarians@gmail.com.
I think that covers it.
Then it's time for the podcast. And we are recording for Contrarians Corner for Fighting With My Family.
Hello and welcome to The Contrarians, where we're right and you're wrong. My name is Alex. Joined as always, now over 200 numeric episodes deep, 200 main feed episodes deep, with my friend and life partner in the battle of the contrary, Julio Oliveira. It is the most important week of the year. It is WrestleMania week, and a supersized one this year. It is WrestleMania 40, Roman numerals, WrestleMania XL. And we do not yet know if the American Nightmare Cody Rhodes will finish the story, and finally dethrone Roman Reigns, the longest reigning champion of the modern era, and I think legitimately one of the four longest reigning champions in the history of the WWF, 60-year history, bringing to an end a near 4-year title reign. We don't know if that's going to happen. There's a lot of obstacles in his way, one of which is the producer on this movie, the great one, the Brahma Bull, The Rock, Dwayne Johnson. Back in 2019, he certainly helped Soraya Knight finish her story of the Knight family. Just an unbelievable pack of fucking carnies from the United Kingdom.
As depicted in this movie or in real life? I guess that's going to be the conversation throughout this entire episode.
There's a greater than 0% chance Soraya ends up listening to this, because she's a bit online in that way. So, Paige, Soraya, you know your family's a bunch of fucking carnies, so don't take it to heart. We're here today to discuss Fighting With My Family, released on Valentine's Day in 2019, starring Florence Pugh, right before she fucking supernovaed into stardom. Nick Frost, the aforementioned Dwayne Johnson, Vince Vaughn. We also have director Stephen Merchant, director and writer Stephen Merchant, making an appearance in this. And a few of the WWE superstars make an appearance. And Julio, we're so vested in this that I know that you would have recognized at least two of them that get an appearance in this.
They saw Sheamus. I pointed at the screen, the whistle.
Based on The Wrestlers Fighting With My Family, which is a documentary about the Knight family. Clips of which are used in the end credits. And we'll get to all that in real talk. For Contrarians Corner, to begin with, 93% on Rotten Tomatoes. Highly rated. Kind of took me off my feet, so much so. And a movie that did all right for itself. It had an $11 million budget and made over $40 million. I guess the biggest surprise in all of this would be that it is a movie grounded in the world of professional wrestling that I had never seen, but Julio has.
It is insane. But I guess it is a movie released in 2019. So that takes it out of the Alex Mattis periphery. You know, like you stopped watching movies. Fair. Like, was it 2014?
So. Pretty much.
I've only seen it once before. And so I knew that. I remember this reminded me doing the prep for this episode, reminded me why I thought it would be good to cover it on the show, because it has that that's so unexpected tomato meter score. I had the same reaction as you. It was like 93%? A wrestling movie? What happened?
And something that to keep in mind as far as like a teaser to tantalize for Real Talk, this movie had an extremely limited shelf life pertaining to its subject matter and the things that would come in her life following. So that's a big part of why I've never seen it. But watched it today. I have many thoughts, many, many thoughts. So let's get into it. 93%, Julio, an overwhelming majority appreciate this movie. Which reviews did you pull to demonstrate this?
All right. Fresh tomatoes all around on the tomato meter. We're going to start with Julian Lytle from Adobe.com, who says, Stephen Merchant, The Rock, and the WWE kind of knocked it out of the park with this one. Fighting with My Family is a dope, heartfelt movie with all the bumps and excitement that's in pro wrestling.
Look at that, man. Just normal folk using pro wrestling vernacular.
Well, is he a normal folk? We don't know. This Julian Lytle, he's never showed up in Contreras Corner before. So,
well, it sounds like someone who like learned a phrase of wrestling while watching this movie and found a way to insert it into their review.
Well, my main concern here, Alex, is that he's talking about the bumps and the excitement of pro wrestling, but is it an accurate representation of pro wrestling? That was my, as I was watching it, I'm no. Like, in the year, well, not the year exactly, but, you know, it's we're less than a year removed from the Iron Claw dropping. And that was a very different pro wrestling world than the one depicted here in Fighting with My Family. And mm-hmm. So when he's talking about, like, the bumps and the excitement, it feels like he's talking about something else. I mean, I guess there were bumps and excitement in the Iron Claw, but it was a different vibe.
There were many bumps taken by the Von Erich kids, both in the ring and outside the ring.
There you go. There you go. All right, let's go.
R.I.P. All nine of you.
Man, let's move on to David Gonzalez from The Cinematic Reel, who says, Fighting with My Family gives us a story with enough heart and laughs that is sure to win over audiences and maybe, just maybe, create a new wrestling fans in the process. Is that a good thing, Alex?
This movie does a really good job of that in a way that others don't. In the way that movies like The Iron Claw or The Wrestler would not. And even like, you know, those are big time dramas. So this would not make wrestling fans either. And like, you think Ready to Rumble or No Holds Barred were making wrestling fans? I mean, you can attest to that. No, they were not.
Right. But is it a bait and switch? You know, it's like you go in because it looks so awesome. And then once you become a wrestling fan, it's really The Wrestler or The Iron Claw or hey, No Holds Barred, God fault. Forbid. Oh, yeah.
That's your fault for caring. As I've learned as a wrestling fan over the past 35 years, that's your fault for caring.
But it's in your blood, Alex. It's not your fault.
Amen. We'll get to that.
Okay, next, Richard Krause from Richard Krause says, it is a universal story about outcasts who create community through sport and heart, combined with the kind of soap opera and spandex storytelling that has made wrestling so popular. Soap opera and spandex, is that how you would describe wrestling?
I guess, to like at a very low base level. White trash Shakespeare is another one.
There you go. You say, I thought it was about the acrobatics and the physical prowess, not so much about the soap opera side of it. I say after, you know, five major maxi episodes of Rock v. Cena and all the soap opera in those, I guess I can see his point. All right, we're going to close with Dusty Wilson from The Spool, who says, if this is an indicator of the future of WWE Productions' output, we can look forward to an unlikely heel turn for the company into making, gasp, good films.
I think they got a little bit of their verbiage off there, but
it wouldn't be a heel turn, right?
Like no, it'd be a face. Yeah, it'd be a face turn.
Yeah.
Sadly, that was not to be. Check out our Patreon for complete retrospective on WWE Studios, WWE Films. Honestly, I think the conclusion at that time was this was the most successful movie to come from WWE Studios.
And there was no fighting with my family, too.
Soraya, you don't half look pretty today, princess.
Yeah, but she's not just pretty on the outside, is she? In there is a heart of gold. Do anything for anyone.
What are you two dickheads after?
Soraya Bavis? Is that how you say her last name? Paige. Wrestlers Rick and Julia Knight raise their children, Soraya and Zach, to follow in their footsteps. As young adults, the siblings apply to join WWE and are evaluated by veteran trainer Hutch Morgan, who agrees to let them try out before a SmackDown taping at the O2 Arena, where they meet WWE legend Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Shortly before her tryout, Soraya adopts the stage name Paige. So we open this with them as kids, and they're watching King of the Ring 2000, and the boy has a like a cardboard version of the spinner belt that he made that was not a thing for like 5 years after King of the Ring 2000. So this like really bothered me to kick things off. And we see a shot of Paige as a little girl with like a copy of the Divas title or a cardboard version of it that she made. And that title didn't exist till like 2008. So already I'm annoyed. And this will not be the last time this is mentioned.
They're just Stephen Merchant fudging with the timeline from frame one. Did you know that this was a Dwayne Johnson vanity project? When you sat down to watch? Okay. Is that because you automatically assume that every Dwayne Johnson project is a Dwayne Johnson vanity project?
No, but I remember how like gung-ho he was about this and like how just obsessed he was with getting this movie made back in 2017, 16 when it first started. Like, I remember it just became this momentary thing with him of like, this, I need to do this. And I have my definite beliefs as to why he was so smitten with this story and getting this project executed. We'll get to that in real talk.
But I mean, he tells us in the movie.
Yeah.
He pretty much looks at the camera, breaks the fourth wall and explains it. But yeah, we'll get there. Well, I brought it up because it's they're watching TV. And
because he gets the and credit.
Well, that too. But he's on the TV that they're watching, right? Like I couldn't tell you what the era was, but
such a weird match to pick for him, like winning the title. Like literally any of the other matches where he won the title would make more sense, unless like Paige or her brother like were consulting on the script and said they specifically remember King of the Ring 2000. But you could do fucking Backlash 2000 or Vengeance 2002. The Rock had way more celebrated title wins than King of the Ring 2000.
I mean, if you're gonna mess with the facts to put those fake belts in the opening before they were created, why wouldn't you mess with the fact? I don't care which match they were actually watching when they were kids. Just put the one that looks better, right?
Yeah.
Or create a new match. Just have Hogan fighting Andre the Giant.
There you go. Dwayne gets the end credit, but Vince Vaughn gets the with credit. I was pretty fired up about that. And they show these fucking horrific stage parents exploiting their kids at a young age and making them wrestle and fucking take bumps when they're 13 years old. The kids kind of got it down already, though. They're in a collar and elbow and having a full conversation about what to do because it's fake, you know?
So is that a thing only in England, or is that happening also here in the United States? This kind of like underground preteen fight club or wrestling club?
I mean, you can find kids kind of wrestling anywhere in today's climate. There's I guess you'd call her a prospect. Her name's Billy Starks, and this girl that a lot of people seem high on, and she's been wrestling since she was like 15, and she's just now like 18. I don't know if it's a good idea to put minors in the ring with people who aren't and have been wrestling for 20 years, but I don't. Who's to say, honestly? You know,
Nick that's Frost the point. Is to say.
It's fake bullshit, so it doesn't matter. You couldn't do that in like professional sports, but this shit's not real. So, but I do know the British scene specifically has like the Dynamite Kid was wrestling when he was, I think, 15 or 16. Davey Boy Smith, the same. Mexico's the same way, you know, to be honest. It's at a much higher level than here. Like Rey Mysterio Jr., I think his first like match was when he was like 14 or 15. It's just, it's a bit more part of the indie culture there than it is here. I've never, with the exception of that Billy Starks gal, I don't think I've been to a show where a child wrestled. No, that's not true. There was one in Denton one time where I had, there was a kid that was like a son of a wrestler or friends with somebody, and he came in the ring and did a few spots, and it was funny. But I do not condone this at all.
Okay, good. You can see we're like tiptoeing into the beauty pageant territory. Like,
oh,
little,
yeah.
Little Miss Sunshine, but with more violence.
But yeah, this is kind of like the opening salvo into the exploitative nature of Soraya and Zach's parents. And one of the things I will give this movie credit for, though, is it doesn't shy away from showing the parents of Soraya and Zach, just the level of carny fucking fraud shit they executed. And it's still going to this day. I'm sure they sell 8x10s that they signed themselves with Soraya's picture on it back in the UK.
So do you buy Nick Frost as this character? Because I have trouble with Nick Frost whenever he's not attached to Simon Pegg. And that was, it's weird that, you know, in a few scenes we're going to see Stephen Merchant show up. I'm like, why didn't they give Simon Pegg that role? You know, that way you would have the duo as they're meant to be together. There's something off when Nick Frost doesn't have Simon Pegg to balance him out. And maybe I just don't like disliking Nick Frost. And I wasn't a fan of him here. He's not a particularly good dad. Do you know his wife from anywhere? Lena Headey?
No. Should I?
Have you seen the Judge Dredd movie that's not Stallone?
From like 2009 with Carl Urban?
Yes. So she's the villain in that movie.
Okay.
That's what you would know her from. I mean, the rest of the world knows her from Game of Thrones because she was the queen in Game of Thrones. She was Cersei Lannister and she was amazing.
So that would have been like a big get for this.
Yeah. Yeah. She was already a known everywhere. So arguably, I guess depending on which side of geekdom you fall on, she would be a bigger name than Nick Frost in that sense, right? Like Nick Frost is not in Game of Thrones. And then she was, I guess if you want to go further back, she was in that TV show, the Sarah Connor Chronicles.
All right.
Maybe she played Sarah Connor? I don't know, but she's one of the main characters there. So she's kind of like a big deal. Never would have thought that her career would lead to her being in, like the next stage in her career, post-Game of Thrones, would be a movie about wrestling. Shows her what I know.
Dredd was 2012. I went too far back. The main thing I remember about that was Olivia Thirlby from Juno. I remember she was in it, and that was kind of the reason I saw it, because I felt like she should have been more after Juno than she was.
She should have been Dredd.
But you know what? The movie she was in last just won Best Picture on Sunday, so I think she's doing all right these days.
What's Carl Urban done lately?
Excuse me? Have you ever been to see live wrestling?
No.
Well, can I ask why not?
Because I'm not a child or a moron.
There's a part in the opening of this where Paige and some of her friends are out handing out flyers for the upcoming show. And these, what I guess would appear to be popular girls. It's a theme of three blonde girls being against Paige throughout this movie. They ask, have you ever watched wrestling or do you like wrestling? And she said, no. And I said, why? She says, because I'm not a child or a moron. And I was like, fucking amen. Preach. That's why I always say, I don't want this life. It chose me. And so like that, the fact that that was written into it, I was just like, see, these people knew what they were doing. They know it's a disease.
But those girls never get a comeuppance. I mean, I think that the movie then bends over backwards to show you that wrestling is a force of good. In fact, I think that the next scene, they show you that wrestling will keep you from doing drugs.
Yeah, I suppose, because Zach runs like training sessions or some shit with the local youths. But again, I know too much about specifically the British scene and how much scamming and conniving there is. So I believe that Zach Bavis took money from young kids and told him he was going to teach them how to wrestle. But I don't believe that he was the saint that drove around town and, you know, kept kids off the street and told them just say no.
See, I fall right down the middle. I think that he could have taught them wrestling. That doesn't mean that they were not going to do drugs. I think that you could do both. You can do drugs and you can be a wrestler.
Yeah, absolutely. There's decades and decades of proof that back that up. And countless deaths that also reinforce that notion. He does tell her before the WWE tryout, this is a quote I have written down, that we're riddled with wrestling. There is no cure. And it's that's the realest thing that's ever been said in a movie about professional wrestling. You know, that's up there with the Ram at the end of The Wrestler saying, out there is where I belong. And I wouldn't wish this life on anybody. It's rewarding in very minor senses.
It's hepatitis. That's what you're saying.
No, well, I don't know about that.
Tell me about this, Alex. Is it really like that? These tryouts? Is it just like American Idol? You send them your tapes and then one day they'll call you?
It used to be a bit more like that. That was you just, you know, send your tape and your 8x10 to the WWF, WCW, ECW. ECW could just show up and like be like, hey, can I set up the ring, and then work your way up that way. But yeah, I mean, they reach out and they have their ear to the ground about anybody, especially, you know, during the time this movie came out, man. They were, anyone who had any modicum of hype, they were like, yeah, fuck it, give them a contract. And so, yeah, you have to show up and try out. Bigger names, like famously the Briscoes, you will try out in front of a few wrestlers and the scouts while they're setting up for like Raw or SmackDown. Like the ring will be set up and you'll have a tryout match in front of everybody there. Young Bucks had one as well. What they're demonstrating here is similar to like NXT and their previous developmental systems. Like, come down and try out, and you basically, they look at your body, see what you can do in the ring, and go from there. And then you kind of, you know, all right, we'll pay $500 a week to see if you have anything in you. It is very much like American Idol in the sense there are rounds you have to get past. I can tell you this, though. If anyone went to one of those tryouts and bothered The Rock backstage, they would be shown the door so fucking quickly. Like, I'm not kidding in the sense that may be the most unrealistic scene of the movie. And the final match that happens in this did not happen at all. And this is still more unrealistic than what transpires here.
But Alex, this is a movie produced by The Rock, and that scene stars The Rock playing himself. Are you telling me The Rock is lying to us?
And he would know better than anybody. If some fucking Jamo came up and tried to bother him while they're at a tryout, he'd be like, get the fuck out of here. Like, you know, it's that's not how that works. That's not how etiquette at wrestling shows work. Prove me wrong. If things have changed now, if some local yokel goes in for a tryout and goes up and like tries to pick Roman Reigns' brain, and you're telling me he's not immediately escorted out of the building, then, you know, chat me up. Tell me I'm wrong. But it does give The Rock an opportunity to cut the same promo I've seen The Rock do for 25 years to people who have never seen him before. So
this is the Rock teaching the mainstream what he's about when he's not making action movies. Is that what you're saying?
That's it. This is like a fucking coloring book of The Rock for the masses. Like, I'm not kidding. Like, that's since 1999. Since The Rock turned babyface in 99, that's the promo. You know, who are you? It doesn't matter who you are. And then he finds some inanimate object and promises to shine it up, turn it sideways, and stick it up your candy ass. That's what he does. And he has been doing that forever. But I can see, you know, John and Jane Q viewer who have never watched The Rock go and be like, oh. Can you imagine the mind of someone who watches wrestling? What is that quote from the beginning of Beyond the Mat? The level of the mind that watches wrestling. Well, I will give him credit in the one part where Stephen Merchant and his wife ask what WWE is. And even if you don't know any wrestler, I feel like WWE is such a part of the global lexicon that, like, you still know what it is, even if you just want to make fun of it. So that was kind of surprising.
So, well, you're giving them credit for what? For the reaction of the family? They're like, how do you not know?
No, just making it look worse than it is, because it's this family of fucking white trash carnies that are like, how come you don't know what the WWE is? It's the problem with Ready to Rumble, that since that movie came out, everyone has always said of it's a movie where all the naysaying characters think that wrestling is just stupid bullshit for white trash. And the people supporting it are stupid white trash. Like, that's the message in that movie. And here it's, you know, you're not expanding anyone's mind. God damn. I imagine, like, if Florence Pugh had anything to do with this today, like, and, you know, gave praise to WWE, can you imagine the endorsement of that? But it's not to be. She made this. She's like, I am out of here.
Shook The Rock's hand. It's like, thank you. Until we meet again.
She gave him the Kurt Angle at ECW, went up and said, I'm leaving. I want my check mailed to me. And if my face is shown anywhere on this broadcast, you will be hearing from my attorney. In the actual tryout, there's a wrestler who I believe is supposed to look like Pete Dunne. Like, there's a few Easter eggs in this for, you know, people like me to point at the screen. One of the wrestlers in there, I think his name's Dan Mastiff. He's just a British wrestler. I was like, huh. There's a pretty big Easter egg that I'm going to talk about in real talk, specific to the UK wrestling scene. I start off here, too, with, like, I don't know who Vince Vaughn's supposed to be.
I was going to ask you when you're talking about Easter eggs. I was like, is Vince Vaughn supposed to be someone?
I think he's a composite character because the way he addresses like the trainees when they get to NXT and shit sounds a lot like the tales you hear of John Laurinaitis, Johnny Ace, the big speeches he would give before seminars or tryouts or whatnot. But then at the end there, it's like, is he supposed to be Mick Foley? Because the Rock says something about throwing him off the top of a cage. And I think he's just kind of like a composite, but I win in the end because Vince Vaughn's wearing an NXT tracksuit for the majority of this movie. And I just, that visual to me is so fucking funny.
It's weird to cast him for this character though, right? Because it's not, it's not a Vince Vaughn character
at all. No,
he's very, just gruff and unhappy. He's very, serious, but at the same time you can sense the inner Vince Vaughn trying to break through. So there's a couple scenes where he just can't help himself and starts doing the Vince Vaughn riff, and then I guess Merchant just pushed the button and the electric collar shocked him, and then he was like, nope, went back to to his character. But I was trying to figure out why they would cast Vince Vaughn there, unless he's just really, is he a wrestling fan? Is that what's going on, or is he just friends with The Rock? What, how do you end up with that casting decision? Because it's not like he's going to be driving people to watch the movie. I mean, we all love Vince Vaughn, but I don't think that we love him to that level.
That I don't know. And when he gives the speech about like his wrestling career and basically, you know, summarizes the plot of The Wrestler and says that was like him, that's exactly it. It's like that's not something for Vince Vaughn to do.
So are you telling me that if they had cast Mickey Rourke as this character, as the Vince Vaughn character, it would have been too much, actually. I think the movie's just too sad.
I just think this screams of something of like Dwayne and Vince Vaughn hit it off at a party and he wanted to give it to him, or their two publicists were friends or something. It's too odd of a casting choice to not have some sort of backstory to it. Like, I don't believe there was a casting call and there were 10 auditions and Vince Vaughn had the best one for this role. I like Vince Vaughn a lot. I need to be fair. Yes, I like Vince Vaughn a lot. And I think when he's used properly, he's one, very funny, and he can be a captivating actor. We are two big supporters of Fred Claus.
Yep.
And he's a big part of that. But here, yeah, you're exactly right. I'm just like,
I don't have to explain anything. I wish you the best, son. But this is the end of the line for you.
Speaking of which, Morgan chooses Paige to train for the WWE, but not Zach, despite Paige's protests. Morgan forces Zach to return home after making it clear he will never be signed to the WWE, leaving Paige with no one to stick up for her. Arriving at NXT in Florida, Paige has difficulty with the training, especially given that her fellow trainees are mostly models and cheerleaders who have no wrestling experience and thus make poor opponents. Paige also struggles with performing choreographed promos as they clash with her own natural instincts, and suffers from Morgan's constant belittlement of her mistakes. Now, that's every coach there, but Bill DeMott at their previous developmental territory, Deep South, was known for, if you fucked up, you were definitely going to hear it. That's classic WWE shit, by the way. Paige's brother is not good and didn't deserve to be signed, so don't get that twisted. But that's classic WWE. We'll take one of you, but not the other. Like,
that's the soap opera part of a soap opera in spandex.
Tama Tonga and what was his brother? Tonga Loa? I think they are collectively now known as the Gorillas of Destiny. They wrestle in New Japan and used to wrestle in Ring of Honor before that was acquired by AEW. But that was a famous case of, yeah, they just, they love to fuck with people like that. And Paige was very good, but I don't know what she was the first time they saw her. Actually, this was her second tryout. Her first tryout was the one they kind of manipulate the story a little bit. Her first tryout she had is when she put Tanner on and dyed her hair blonde because she thought that's what they wanted. And that's when they didn't pick her up. And then they went to a second tryout. And that's when they said, we'll take you, but not him.
Okay. But going back, you know, wrestling to where you can say, this is good wrestling, this is not good wrestling. I was just like, this is wrestling. So I can't tell you what the difference was between the people that were doing the tryouts. So you're telling me that just based on what we see in the movie, Zach is not a good wrestler, but Paige is?
Oh, I'm speaking of their real counterparts.
Okay, so like, in the movie, because the movie, it looked...
No, they don't do anything to show you what makes a good wrestler and what doesn't.
Okay, thank you.
And yeah,
I was wondering if I'd missed something. I was like, what made her special? Because, you know, it just seemed like they picked her because she's Florence Pugh. And, well, the movie has to revolve around her, but it just seemed very, not just arbitrary, but, I mean, I guess eventually what they say is, oh, because she has that inexplicable thing, right? Like the X element.
It's the same thing as like in the Rocky movies. They don't demonstrate what makes a good boxer over just swinging haymakers for 12 rounds. You know what I mean? It's just part of the story.
Right. But in this case,
for lack of a better phrase,
in this case, I think
they don't even show him doing much. Like they show him locking up and then he grabs a headlock on her and he talks so loud that the people in the next room can hear the spots he's calling.
No, he takes a blade slowly.
Yes.
But what I was going to say is, unlike with Rocky, I think that in this case, because the story goes on to show the psychological consequences of being picked and not being picked, right? And thinking that you're worthy versus thinking that maybe you're not worthy and all stuff. So I felt that it would have benefited, like the story, the audience, we all could have done with a little more differentiation over what's good and what's bad, you know, so that when Vince Vaughn or when The Rock, when anybody's saying, no, you're good, I can go, yes, finally, she realized what we knew all along, right? Or they point out, this is why you're good. And then we all learn together why she's good or why he is not as good. But it never happens. You know, it's just all very abstract.
It is. And also they don't at all show that like Paige was a star in NXT before she went to the WWF, like the main roster. Abstract's a good word. It just like there's nothing to really play off of it. And you don't learn anything. Like even the wrestler, for example, like you immediately in the first 10 minutes of that movie are able to figure out that Randy's really good at it for the way he can work the crowd. And like, you know, he doesn't have to really call anything. He just knows how to work out there. And Iron Claw the same way. You mm-hmm. can tell like why the Von Erichs are special and whatnot. And it's a good point. They're just like, everyone does a snapmare. It's like, all right, you're gone, you're gone, you're gone. It's a very paint by numbers approach to a story like this that is made for mass consumption. And unfortunately, when you and I have in our catalog the Iron Claw, the Wrestler, and most importantly, Ready to Rumble, you know, we've seen how this can be done and executed in a premier fashion. Worth calling out, Paige did not start at NXT. She started with their previous developmental territory, Florida Championship Wrestling, which was called FCW, which by almost universal accounts from people who were there was just an absolutely alcohol soaked fuckfest with everybody. So it doesn't surprise me that they don't want to draw attention to that.
This all seems pretty wholesome. Even when
the recap. And even when she got to NXT, there was still a lot of like Friends style action of everyone sleeping with everybody. So
well, Vince Vaughn watches.
That was this thing, dude. Like their developmental territories were not like for public consumption per se until NXT and the advent of the WWE Network when NXT became a weekly program. So they were not as closely monitored. Fair to say a bit more punk rock than what the corporate picture of NXT became.
So what you're telling me is in real life, she was allowed to give receipts.
That's like the wrestling term that definitely got used the most in this.
It even has a callback.
It does. A receipt. famous professional wrestling lunatic, New Jack, God rest his soul, tried to kill a man who hurt him in a match one time. And I remember he once said that was the receipt, the paper it was printed on, the cash register, the money under the table. That was everything.
Well, I'm glad that you explained it, because it underlines something that I was feeling, which was that she was, see, the danger of sounding like I am minimizing a woman's emotions, and that's not what I'm doing. But I think that when you tell me that the conditions, or when the movie is trying to tell me that the conditions at this training facility are so inhumane that it really, like, it breaks her, right? It breaks her spirit and she can't handle it. Like, that's not what I was seeing on screen. And maybe that's not a problem casting Vince Vaughn, is that even when he's frowning, he's kind of lovable. So, like, he's not Arlie Ermey, you know? This is not Full Metal Jacket, right? I can completely understand that after a week or 2 weeks of her being there, she's like, I can't handle it. I want to go back home, right? It just seems like they're all hanging out. You know, there's some big tires that they have to push on the beach, and they got to, like, bounce off the ropes. They give each other gentle receipts. There's a lot of, like, riding in a bus. I half expected them to break into song. I mean, it seems like a good time.
The strife and the struggle that is portrayed here it minimizes so much. And especially then, like, before what they call at the end, the women's revolution. And Paige was tough son of a bitch, you know, in the sense of physically and emotionally, you know, she didn't take much shit. So I understand it's a movie, and I don't for a second question there were times where she was down and wanted to go back home and all that shit. But I think personally, it does a disservice to not only her, but the other women portrayed in this movie, to make it seem like it was so easy for them and that they were so easily, like, oh, crestfallen by the obstacles thrown their way.
Yeah. Well, I think that if they were not trying to make me believe that this is breaking her or coming close to breaking her, then it wouldn't be that much of a problem. And I was like, oh, we're just having fun with, like, a training montage. But the problem is that the training montage leads to scenes where she's just in tears and having second thoughts about the career that she's chosen and all that stuff. So I'm like, okay, if that's where you want to take the character, then you need to be harsher when it comes to these montages. It can't be all fun with, you know, cool music and just shot like everybody is having a blast.
Good morning, wrestling nerds.
Good morning, nerds.
Welcome to promo class.
During her WWE debut at an NXT live event, likely on the Largo Loop, I inserted that. That's not on the Wikipedia page. There has to be a wrestling fan listening to this to know what I meant by that. Paige is heckled by the crowd and freezes, leaving the ring in tears. She tries bleaching her hair and getting a spray tan in a desperate attempt to fit in with her peers. After failing an obstacle course, Paige lashes out at the other trainees for gossiping about her when they weren't. A sympathetic Morgan reveals to Paige that the real reason he didn't let Zach sign up is that the WWF would have forced him to work as a jobber, which would have ruined his health. And then this is where he explains that's what he did. Morgan implies that a similar experience forced him to give up on his own wrestling career. See, now that part could potentially be Matt Bloom. That's his name. Prince Albert wrestled as Giant Bernard in Japan and finally Tensai when he came back to the WWE. That dude never really reached past mid-card status in the WWF, and he is one of the head officials in the training system. So again, as a wrestling nerd, I'm able to see all these different things they piece together for the Vince Vaughn character. And it's like, okay, that's, you know, he's a jigsaw puzzle of sorts.
See, what I thought, and this shows how different we are. I thought back to the Muppet Caper when Kermit sits on the bench with, I think it's Peter Falk, and Peter Falk goes on this rambling that ends up being about himself. I felt when Vince Vaughn starts talking and he starts talking about Zach, but then slowly he keeps going on and on and on. You're like, oh, he's talking about his life. And I half expected Paige to go, are we still talking about Zach?
She should have turned to him with a single tear beating up in her eye and said, you're so beautiful. And Vince Vaughn goes, I know. The main thing is Vince Vaughn's physical stature and appearance. He would have been a journeyman in the 70s in wrestling. He did not have the look for what is implied to be the 90s. So that part of it, I was a bit, it was a bit of a stretch.
So you're having trouble picturing him wrestling The Rock?
Yes.
Okay. Because I did too.
I'm not saying I wouldn't pay to see them lock up and what happens from there, but you know, I just had a hard time picturing it.
Yeah, it's Vince Vaughn, so that already makes it a big obstacle. But yeah, when it finally gets to that part of the movie, I couldn't make it work in my head. It's like, how does that work? I guess he was younger, he was, you know, more bulked up, but still, it just doesn't. He doesn't look like a wrestler.
One of the trifecta of models that they bring in, that is the kind of the pitted against Paige here, is the yin and yang. His name, Jerry Lynn, GERI-LYNN. And there's a real wrestler who's a former ECW and Ring of Honor world champion named Jerry Lynn, who looked a lot like Randy the Ram. So I was like, that's not Jerry Lynn. But in this scene, they come out. And the timelines of this wouldn't match up at all. So I think this is just supposed to be Easter egg type shit. And once they're actually in the ring, one of them is supposed to be Eve Torres. One of them is supposed to be Alexa Bliss. And one of them is supposed to be Summer Rae. Just like literally they're wearing their ring gear. Again, the timelines of that would not match up at all. But I just thought it was interesting. But yeah, when she gets heckled, like people are acting like she's ugly. And like a big part of Paige's appeal was she was hot and she looked different than all the other women that they had. I have no recollection of anyone acting like Paige was ugly and undeserving of being there. I personally remember the circles I frequented and like websites that I was on at the time thinking it was refreshing that someone looked different. Again, I wasn't at those NXT house shows back in the day. The worst part is Florence Pugh is objectively gorgeous and people are acting like she's ugly.
I mean, that was, I try to just buy into the movie and try to be like, all right, you know, she's, we're supposed to assume that she pales in comparison next to the women that, the stereotypical hotness of the women around her. But what really took me out of the movie was just this depiction of wrestling fans as the kind of people that would heckle and yell and be just so rude. I mean, I'm like, that's not how it goes.
Oh, yeah, of course. That's not how that goes at all. That's
Hey, my co-host is a wrestling fan, and I know that he's a man of integrity and good manners, and he would never behave in such a way.
I appreciate that, and I agree wholeheartedly. I don't think there's any video footage that remains anymore of me doing such, so I think we're all right. I don't know if this was an intentional nod to, but when they do the improv promo battle with those four gals, there is a legendarily infamous segment from Monday Night Raw from 2004 when they were doing this thing called the Divas Search, where it was like a casting call and they were like, hey, come on out, you know, be a WWE diva. And they ended up going to this girl named Christy Hemme, who made a pretty good career for herself in wrestling. But someone had the great idea that all these women that have never been trained in wrestling or really know how to cut wrestling promos, hey, let's just give them a live microphone on Monday Night Raw and see what happens. And then it's like, you each have the 30 seconds to cut a promo on each other. It did not go well, Julio, if you can believe it. They all just started saying horrendous things to each other. And the main one I remember making air was one of them called another one a cum sucking gutter slut. Okay. And then obviously it did not go to those depths of depravity here. But I was like, is this supposed to be like a nod to that? Because again, I'm not sure of what was happening on the NXT house shows at this time, but that's the only time I ever remember them having a segment where they're like, hey, just say what you want.
I don't know if the fact that you are familiar with the Paige story and the world of wrestling and WWE, if that made it easier or harder for you to buy into some of the things that this movie was doing. So, for example, for me at this moment, when she freezes and she basically runs away, I was like, really? Because she seemed such a confident person up to this point in the movie. Like, even when she's training, you know, she talks back to Vince Vaughn. She calls out wrongly, but she calls out like the girls that she thinks are gossiping about her. So for her to completely freeze and not think of a single thing to say when she's doing this, I was going to say this rap battle, you know, the promo battle, it just felt like it was too much. Or is that just what happens sometimes?
Again, I think it was important to the purpose of the movie. If you were on TV and you froze and left like that, they'd be like, just keep on walking. which is why they've convinced themselves that's why NXT exists, so these people can take promo classes so they can remember every single word they're going to say and go out there and recite it verbatim, and just, you know, regardless of how the crowd reacts to it, just keep going, just say what we told you to say, and not interest themselves in actually teaching a craft of how to deliver an interview and how to elicit emotion from the audience. You know, that's why there's one Cody Rhodes and about 25 Ricochets on WWE programming every week. Not to be confused with the outstanding Denzel Washington 90s classic.
I almost went there and I restrained myself, but you kept going.
All right. So one thing I forgot to bring up is that the gas station where Vince Vaughn pours his soul out, it's called Fast Trip. And I was wondering if that has any relation to Quick Trip, one of my favorite gas stations that I frequent.
You know what
great
else?
Hot dogs.
You know what else you forgot to bring up, Alex?
What's that?
The fact that Paige's brother, Zach, is just miserable on the other side of the movie.
Carny fuck, man. He calls up begging for a job. And that'll work sometimes in wrestling. Not at that level, though. If the WWE, then now forever, has their mind made up about you, they have their mind made up about you. So, sorry, man. The good news is that she's going to come home to work one of their indie shows that they've already been promoting her as a WWE superstar. I'm so glad this movie doesn't shy away from demonstrating just the carny fucks that the Knight family were and are. They deserve to be exposed. But of course, knowing them, they watched this and they were like, good business decisions right there.
I mean, the movie seems to think that they're pretty charming. That's why you cast Nick Frost.
Yeah, but again, knowing them, I was watching this and my thought was not they're charming. My thought was, oh, wow, I can't believe the movie actually portrayed them moderately realistically. Believing that professional wrestling isn't worth it and that she'd have a much happier life helping her parents train other wrestlers, Paige decides to quit the WWE and return to her hometown. She travels home for Christmas to inform her family of her decision. Angry that she's giving up on the dream he failed to achieve, Zach attacks Paige during a wrestling match, then gets in a drunken bar fight. Paige changes her mind after Zach berates her for giving up, and she returns to Florida to rejoin the WWE. She reasserts her individuality by readopting her original hair color and skin tone, rapidly improves in training, and befriends and encourages many of her fellow trainees. So this is a really nice way of saying that her brother shoots on her in a match and just beats the shit out of her and gives her a pile driver, which has paralyzed men in the past.
And that convinces her to go back.
Exactly.
You could have broken her neck.
She was in the ring too. She's a big girl. Give her shit.
She does what she's told. She follows the script.
I was sympathetic towards the pain of the brother up to this point. In fact, I kept thinking,
I know the real Zack Knight, so I was not.
Right. This might be one of those instances where my lack of familiarity with the real story worked in my favor when I was watching the movie up to a point. So up before he goes psycho in the ring, I actually was thinking, man, this is the most interesting plot. I really wish that they had left Paige training with Vince Vaughn and we had focused on this dude that just had the rug pulled out from under him, who thought he was great, and now he's been reality checked multiple times. And now he has a babe in the way and he has to basically humiliate himself, you know, and come to terms with just where he stands.
Brother, even if you don't know this guy, how can you have sympathy for anyone who's chosen pro wrestling as a life path that it blows up in their face?
Yeah, but he's training the youths, you know, and yeah,
he's keeping kids off weed.
Yeah, he has. There's that shot where he's on some match back in England, and they throw him on top of like a bunch of thumbtacks, right? Like there's his opponent litters the mat with a.
Oh, yeah. And he doesn't even sell them either. Kind of pissed me off.
Okay, well, but then there's a cut after, and, you know, he's just pulling him out of his back. So it's hard not to be sympathetic towards somebody that's going through that, because I was like, you know, it throws you back to better movies. I was like, oh, yeah, that's kind of like The Wrestler, the real stuff. Paige is complaining about hanging out with Vince Vaughn, and this dude is actually getting hurt back in England. So I was wishing that there was more of that and less of the NXT stuff. But then he does jump the shark and really becomes a bad dude here when he risks. I mean, even Nick Frost is appalled at this behavior. He's like, you could have paralyzed her. You could have broken her neck. So yeah, that's when I stopped cheering for Zach, wishing that he did better. And I guess that's when I came to terms with the fact that everybody in that family sucked.
I was not able to find much more on this, but according to the IMDb trivia section, there is another Knight sibling who is not represented in the film, but is briefly featured in the documentary on which it's based. She's the only member of the family who is not a wrestler. She is a dentist. And I guarantee you all of them have the mindset of, oh, you think you're too good for us? And so God bless you, young lady, wherever you are, for getting out of the quicksand that is the professional wrestling industry.
Do you think the guy that did the Iron Claw learned about this? He's like, see, it's okay to take some siblings out of the movie.
Oh, see, I still maintain that Fritz had it in his will. He's like, if there's ever a movie adaptation, Chris isn't allowed to be in it.
I mean, you would know better than me, but
that was just an off-color joke, Julio, because Fritz hated Chris. And he told Kevin towards the end of his life, if you had any guts at all, you would have killed yourself just like your brothers.
Jesus.
I was bummed they didn't include that in the movie. Holt McCanley pulling a gun, according to lore, the gun that Carrie shot himself with, Fritz pulled on Kevin. And that's when he said, if you had any guts at all, you'd kill yourself. To which Kevin, after telling this story, says, and I want you to know my daddy was a good man. Like, all right, brother.
See, Nick Frost is looking pretty good now.
During this part of her finding her confidence has like arguably the most wrestling's fake moment I've ever seen in a movie, where they're like drilling the dual suicide dive over and over again for this tag match they're running on the house show. And when they finally hit it, they all four sit up, stop selling, and just smile at each other while the crowd's watching them.
But Vince Vaughn approves, right? Like this last montage, which goes on for a while, it culminates, or it reaches its climax with Vince Vaughn cracking a bit of a smile, because he's been watching this entire thing and we keep cutting back to him, and he seems unimpressed, or he seems hesitant to even give him any props. And then at the end, he cracks a smile, and that's how you know you made it. Vince Vaughn finally warmed up to you.
She gets a wink from him at the end of the movie too.
Oh yeah, that's how you know you're part of the family.
Morgan brings the trainees to WrestleMania 30, Superdome, New Orleans, April 6th, 2014. Still the best wrestling event I've ever been to.
I was going
to
say, Alex Matt is somewhere out there.
That's true. The Rock greets Paige and tells her that she will make her Raw debut the following night against current WWE Divas champion AJ Lee. I'm sure that's exactly how it happened.
That's okay. That's not even what happened in the movie. Dude, this was the biggest disappointment. Because they build it up like they take her to like the top floor of this tower or whatever. Right?
Did you think Vince was going to be there?
Yes. Can you blame me? Like they build it up like she's about to meet the Wizard of Oz, right? And then the doors open. It's just God. The Rock. We already saw the Rock earlier in the movie.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, pal.
Yeah, it was a bummer. I feel like The Rock needed to show up once in this movie, and that was already kind of like too much. Twice. Because here's the thing, and I know you haven't seen Ed Wood, but I know that this is kind of like a trope in movies. So there's other instances. So if you think of one, let me know. But in Ed Wood, there's a moment where Ed Wood meets, he's kind of like down his luck. There's a part of the story where he's just, you know, everything's going to hell. And the movie has established that he is a big fan of Orson Welles. And through the contrivances of the plot, he ends up at the same place as Orson Welles. And they have this interaction, and that kind of like drives the rest of the movie, right? Like, it restores his confidence, so to speak. That plot beat, you know, you'd recognize him in other movies. And obviously, that's the part that The Rock is playing here in Paige's story. You know, he shows up to reassure her and provide wisdom and provide perspective and blah, blah, blah. Okay, for one, The Rock's not Orson Welles. So as far as, like, legendary. Maybe he is the Orson Welles of wrestling. Maybe, I don't know, but I'm thinking the equivalency is not quite there, right? Like, what Orson Welles is to filmmaking, I don't know that The Rock is to wrestling, but maybe he is. You would know. But the other thing is, like, in Ed Wood, Orson Welles is not playing Orson Welles. Of course, Orson Welles was dead, but also, if he had been alive, I think it would have been a little too much to have him play that part. Just, like, it just feels like such an ego trip to have The Rock play himself in this role, you know, because he's not really making fun of himself.
You don't say.
But you know what I mean? Like, wouldn't this work so much better if, at the very least, you had a different actor play The Rock? Or do you think that would be worse? Because it would be like, that's not The Rock.
They should have cast someone to play Triple H in this. And someone, like, way smaller than The Rock. Because they've always had that really contentious relationship. So they should have had, like, Jesse Plemons standing next to The Rock playing Triple H, telling Paige that she was going to be on Raw the next night.
Good luck tomorrow, Paige.
Yeah, thanks for picking me.
Nah, I didn't pick you. I just work here.
Backstage at WrestleMania, though, we do get some cameos from The Big Show, from Sheamus, who is rocking his 2016-17 hairstyle that was nothing what he looked like in 2014. So, again, continuity issues. And did you catch The Miz? Miz walks by?
They call him out by name, so of course they did. It was like, that guy looks familiar. And then right after, one of the girls goes, that's The Miz.
And then you turn to your wife and go, that's The Miz. Back home, Zach's got the itch back and he's going to start training kids again. The only reason I took note of this is because it's a montage set to Born to Raise Hell by Motorhead, which is a banger. And it's the song that starts Airheads off. Airheads is a much better movie than this, but I'll give this movie props for that.
Quick aside, just to call out that there's a blind teenage wrestler in this movie who apparently is inspired by a real blind wrestler, if you are to believe the end credits.
That, I have no knowledge of that.
Man, give me the movie about that kid, because we only get to see a little bit of his training, but that seemed fascinating. It was like a lot more interesting than whatever Vince Vaughn is doing over at NXT.
Paige makes her Raw debut, where she again freezes, didn't happen, and takes a severe beating from AJ Lee, didn't happen, before finally turning the tables, before beating the champion. Claiming Lee's title for herself, she proudly declares that this is my house now. That didn't happen, as her family and friends cheer her victory back home. My notes say, the fuck is AJ wearing? The fuck is this?
Okay, but let's pretend that this is not that it's not based on a true story. This is just something that the movie's telling us, right? This is where I got confused. And we've, you know, there's echoes of this in our conversation about the Iron Claw. when the line between what's real and what's staged, what's fixed, as they call it in this movie, and what is, I guess, spontaneous, you know, it blurs. Okay, for one, does it make sense? Whether it happened in real life or not. Like, does it make sense that they would just give her like 24 hours notice that she's going to be in this?
Yes.
Okay, so that's how it happens? Jesus.
Yes.
That's insane. That's no way of running a business.
Well, I told you, they like fucking with people like that. I don't know if that's exactly how it happens anymore. It probably does, yeah. But like, as recently as just a few years ago, yeah, they love fucking with people. Like, especially WrestleMania weekend, they bring everybody in and then they'll be like, hey, you're going to be on Raw tomorrow night and you just have to deal with it.
All right. Well, that was question number one. Question number two. So are they really fighting? What the fuck is happening in the sequence?
Yeah, this is so dumb.
Because they're selling it like they're really getting hurt, which I know. I mean, that could happen also with just like, you know, a regular match. But then there are times where like it happened with Aaron Claw, right? It seems to me like nobody, like the people in the ring, the people outside the ring, the people watching on TV, like nobody knows what the outcome is supposed to be. That's not the case, right? Like, I mean, no. At the very least, Paige and the woman she's fighting, they should know who's supposed to win at the end.
The match itself was like 10 seconds long. Like, Paige came. Okay, first of all, Paige was the NXT Women's Champion. So she wasn't an unknown. She got a huge reaction when she came out that night. That's the Smoothie King Center, New Orleans, Louisiana, night after WrestleMania 30. I was there. Yeah, she came out and it like the back and forth was pretty minimal. And then AJ slapped her and was like, yo, you debut. I'll put my title on the line. And then AJ just put her finishing move on her, which was a submission hold. I think she called it the Black Widow. And then Paige just reversed it, and her finisher called the Paige Turner, and that was the match. It was like 10 seconds. She pinned her and got a huge reaction for it. And then she hit the fucking back. She did not make some big impassioned speech. I think they had to clear the ring so the Ultimate Warrior could come out and say goodbye before he died later that night.
Jesus. I'm glad they didn't put that in the movie, because that
would have cast a pall on Paige's debut.
Yes. I'm sure Nick Frost and Lena Headey wouldn't have given a fuck. They would have just continued partying over in England.
That became her catchphrase. This is my house. Yeah, this was all very Hollywood. Okay, to say the very
least. Do you think the movie's trying to tell us? Because I think that that's the main problem.
It's Rocky, dude. It's just a paint by numbers story, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just the feel good.
But in this scene, like, are we supposed to, like, when you're watching the movie, does Vince Vaughn know what's going to happen? Does The Rock know what's going to happen?
The Rock had already flown back to Miami, dog. Like, he wasn't there.
What is he shooting at the time that this story is happening?
That would have been early 2014. So maybe Skyscraper, maybe Jumanji. You know, he had places to be, people to see.
Grab the hot dog and was on his way.
And then also, like, the idea that on a Raw, she could grab a mic and do, like, this long-winded improv promo without the lights going out or cutting to commercial. And then Vince Vaughn's just like, you're going to make it, kid. It's a bridge too far for me as a wrestling fan who knows, who has a good idea of how the sausage is made at those shows. I do want to give a shout out to Zelina Vega. Tia Trinidad is her shoot name. She played AJ Lee. AJ Lee never wore ring gear like that. So I don't know what the deal with that was. AJ Lee had pretty fucking cool ring gear. It was very individualistic. She was kind of the precursor to Paige for the gal who, obviously, she was still beautiful, much like Paige is, but did not look like what they were constantly churning out in terms of top heavy blondes and whatnot. AJ and Paige would team together to defeat the Bella Twins at the next year's WrestleMania in San Francisco, where Paige's whole fucking Carney family was front row. But I just want to give her props because Zelina Vega, really, when she's cutting like the promo at the end, she really hits the cadence of AJ Lee. Like, I thought that was just really well done in a scene where I was already like, what the fuck is going on? This isn't what happened. And I was there. I would remember. That stuck out as something that was good. So props to her. And then we get some title cards. That Paige's involvement in the WWE helped spark the women's revolution in 2015. I think they put women's revolution in quotations because that was like a marketing thing they did.
But that's when they were finally able to vote, right?
Exactly. They were able to vote and to leave the house without their male counterparts. It's when Stephanie McMahon gave them permission to do so. And the best is the final title card that lets us know that Dwayne Johnson is still alive and well at a remote location. It says, like, Dwayne Johnson went on to have a successful career outside of wrestling. And it's like, oh, the fucking nerve, dude. Like, I just can watch him watching the final cut of the film be pressed. And when that title card goes up, his arms are folded. He's wearing a shirt with the sleeves cut off with his glasses on and just nodding his head in approval.
We missed it, and we need to call it out. You know, we called out Sheamus and The Big Show and The Miz. John Cena is there, too. I guess that's in the WrestleMania part of it, right?
No, that's at the Raw the night after. That's just actual footage from that Raw that they just put into it. I don't care, it's Cena. It.
He's there. Before he was part of the DCEU, before he was Peacemaker, before he sold out, he's there.
Before he was naked at the Academy Awards. Yes,
now he's gone Hollywood. That's how you know. The Academy has assimilated him. But this is before that. I heard the music. I'm like, hey, yeah, I know that.
Well, that was footage from the actual episode of Monday Night Raw from April 7th, 2014. The footage we see of Florence Pugh and Zelina Vega battling for the WWE Divas Championship was shot on February 20th of 2017, at the Staples Center in Los Angeles, California. And there is a heck of a story that goes along with it. So I think that would be best saved for Real Talk. Because if you're ready, Julio, I'm ready to move along and tear the stars out from the sky.
If you say so, Alex, let's do it.